Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Obviously, it's a big one because it's the next game on our schedule. That's the way we think about it. But it is a division game at our place on Thanksgiving. I mean, there's no getting around that. I expect it to be an awesome atmosphere, both teams playing at a high level and a really good game. It's obviously, from a game planning standpoint, at least you're familiar. You know, they're fresh in your mind from just a couple weeks ago. It doesn't diminish the challenge that the Minnesota Vikings give us. You know, a really good defense, a really good team, and really well coached. So we'll have our hands full. As far as a preparation standpoint, it doesn't seem like too long ago I was looking to film with these guys anyways. The goal every week is to be, you know, efficient and explosive in the run game. You know, some weeks we've achieved that goal and others we haven't. Obviously, last week wasn't good enough. The good thing about playing on a Thursday is you kind of get to go out there, you know, quickly redeem yourself.
It's very important. I don't know how many wins we got this, you know, I guess this decade. It'd be very important, and it's especially important for our season. This determines who's going to go to the Big Ten Championship. It's a big stake at hand, and we just got to go out there and prepare. It's a great year historically when Ohio State and Michigan are, you know, the top guest competitors for a national championship. And it's just good for the Big Ten. You know, I'm just glad that the historic tradition of the Big Ten is, you know, I guess restored.
We all know what it means. And then you add in the fact it's number two versus number three, Big Ten Championship, and possible college football playoff berth is on the line. You know, nothing needs to be said. I remember my freshman year, I came into the practice. Coach Hope whispered something in my ear that got me really, really fired up. And I remember I was running faster than I had all the whole entire season, the whole entire week of practice. And I played one of the best games of my career that week. You know, every guy's different a little bit, but all that, you know, each person has to do is make sure that they're ready to play. And we're going to need to be at our best for that game.
No matter what the record is, whenever we play, you know, it's always going to be a battle. You can take the records and throw them out. You can take the seasons and just throw them out, honestly. At this time of the year, it's all about one thing, and it's just beat the team up north. The records being as good as they are on both sides, you know, it does intensify the game a little bit more. I mean, I remember watching as a little young buck, watching Troy and Ted play one versus two. They always have good players, you know, a good team, regardless of the record. They're one of those programs that can always get top talent.
Good football team. We don't like them. They don't like us. It's going to be a rough and tough football game. But you know, it's always one of those hard-fought battles. You do have respect for your opponent always and understand that they're a good football team. Yeah, we don't like each other, but there's still, you know, respect for the game.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Counting down the days are we until the rivalry game of all rivalry games all across college football commences once again. Ohio State number two, Michigan number three, getting after it at the Horseshoe on Saturday. You just heard a lot of pregame audio from, let's see, Jordan Lewis, the outstanding cornerback of the Michigan Wolverines, Jake Butt, the All-American tight end, Chris Wormley and JT Barrett of Ohio State, and we are ready and raring to go right here on a Wednesday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for being a part of it. Appreciate you joining us. We have a lot of good folks to talk to today. Coming up at about 3:35, we're going to talk to our friend Nick Baumgartner, who covers the Wolverines for MLive.com, and get the Michigan perspective, as we are now just a couple of days away from the showdown for supremacy. Well, we can't even say really for supremacy of the Big Ten Eastern Division, because if Michigan wins, yes, then they reign supreme in the Big Ten East and they go into the Big Ten Championship game. If Ohio State wins, they don't have supremacy in the Big Ten East. It means Penn State is going to win the division. So we can't really say it's for supremacy, but it is for supremacy of the Big Ten, because if Ohio State wins, there is little doubt they are going to be in the Final Four and be in the college football playoff. If Michigan wins, they've got another opportunity to cement a spot for themselves there, of course, with a win in the Big Ten Conference Championship game. So we're going to talk to Nick Baumgartner about that coming up at 3:35. A little bit later on, we'll shift gears and get into MAC championship type action. I'll use the word type there. because Jason Candle and his Rockets are going to face Western Michigan for an opportunity to win the MAC Western Division and play in the MAC Championship game up at Ford Field. So that's a huge test for the Rockets. The undefeated Western Michigan team is ready and raring to go, and it's in their place. So we'll have that going on. And coming up here in just a couple minutes, as soon as I'm informed that he is ready to go, we will talk to, we do have him. Okay. I didn't see that, anywhere on my screen. My apologies. So we do want to, commence, the program today with Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. Normally joins us on Thursday, but there's something going on tomorrow. I can't figure out what it is. Paul, is there something going on? Is there a reason why we can't talk tomorrow?
It's a rare off day, believe it or not. At least I think it is to this point, depending on how much stuff I can get done before the basketball game tonight.
I was going to say, you sure that the basketball team doesn't have a game tomorrow night or something? Is you actually get an actual day off here, huh?
I think so. At this point, Bob, let's not get too carried away, but I think so.
Well, let me be the first to wish you a happy Thanksgiving Eve, and I hope you do get a chance to recharge that battery a little bit tomorrow with some maybe some football on TV and a wonderful dinner and some time with your family. So enjoy that when you get it, Paul. Okay, we are all, of course, going to enjoy what happens on Sunday or Saturday. I beg your pardon. And quite frankly, you know, we all expect and hope the Ohio State. A lot of people hope and expect the Ohio State Buckeyes to win. But I think we are all, no matter whether you are Scarlet and Gray or Maize and Blue, and there are a ton of the Maize and Blue fans up here in the Toledo area, we're going to enjoy this showdown. I started to say this is for supremacy of the Big Ten East, and it isn't, and it's weird. I was talking about this yesterday, Paul, and we'll start the conversation with this. It almost doesn't seem fair, almost, that the Wolverines essentially have to win two games to get to the college football playoff. The Buckeyes have to win but one. It's strange but true. If Ohio State beats Michigan on Saturday and Penn State comes away with the Big Ten championship, or really, no matter who comes away with it, Penn State or Wisconsin, the Buckeyes are going to be in the playoff. But if Michigan wins the showdown Saturday, sorry, your job still isn't done. If you want to secure a spot in the playoff, you got to win the conference championship game against probably Wisconsin. So it's kind of odd, but it's almost like the big showdown between the Buckeyes and Wolverines is the stepping stone to the real big matchup here if Michigan is to win.
Well, there's a couple of things to that, Bob. First off, we think Ohio State would be in if they win Saturday. There's no guarantee, but we think so. Secondly, with what would lie ahead for Michigan with having to win two, I think that's kind of the peril of having a conference championship game.
Yeah.
You know, as we talked the other week, it worked to Ohio State's benefit in 2014 to have the championship game. I think right now for Michigan, and you might even be able to make the argument for Wisconsin, assuming they win the West and they're playing in Indianapolis next week, it's a little bit of a dangerous slope because it's another opportunity to lose. You know, we made a big, some of us have kind of had fun with this. If you think back to 2002, when Ohio State won the national championship, mm-hmm. if you remember, they were co-Big Ten champions with Iowa that year. Iowa lost to Iowa State and then went on an incredible run. Ohio State and Iowa did not play that year. Had we had divisions, they would have played in a Big Ten championship game. And if you remember how Ohio State season went, every game seemingly was a nail-biter and they were hanging on by a thread. And I do remember Jim Tressel being asked about it, and he said the concern would have been it was another opportunity to lose. So that's kind of what's staring Michigan in the face right now. It's very possibly what's staring Wisconsin in the face. And while Ohio State most likely doesn't have to do that, they could still win the East if Penn State were to lose, but I don't think any of us really expect that to happen. It's just kind of the danger that comes with having these conference championship games in some years now.
You know, Paul, you're 100% right, by the way, and the way you phrase that is right, too. There's just another opportunity to lose and play yourself out of the national championship playoff picture. And because of that, I just wonder if there's anything that they can do, because you're right, there's no guarantee that Ohio State is going to stay in the top four if they beat Michigan. But come on, you know, they're number two for the second straight week. They stay a solid two. If you beat the number three team, a highly rated number three team in the college football playoff, chances are pretty doggone good you're not dropping down as far as five. You're either going to stay at two, or maybe you go to three, or maybe you go to four, but you're not going to drop out of this thing if you are a one-loss Ohio State team. So essentially, they don't have to play that other opportunity to lose. They just get to kind of sit there comfortably and put their feet up and watch two teams play for the Big Ten championship, knowing that if, you know, no matter who wins at Penn State or Wisconsin, chances are they're not going to bump Ohio State out of their nice, comfortable resting spot at number two. They each have another opportunity to win, but that chance of losing.
Well, and as you said, chances are they won't do it. But again, we don't know that. And I think what this is going to do, Bob, regardless of how it plays out, it will, after the fact, it will be interesting to hear those on the selection committee talk about what weight is being put in a conference championship. You know, their job is going to be a little more challenging this year under all of those scenarios. They're looking at trying to put the four best teams in the 14 playoff. And you can define that however you want. I think you can look right now at teams like Oklahoma and USC with the way they're playing and say they have as much reason to say they should be considered as anybody else. But it's going to really beg for a definition of how much weight is put in a conference championship. And here's the other part that'll be, and I didn't realize this till last Saturday, and maybe you knew this, Bob, but Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, who play one another in the last game of the regular season, and obviously the Big 12 doesn't have a championship game this year, they've moved that game to next week. So they're going to be playing a regular season game the same day that the conference championship games are going to be going on. And it will be interesting by comparison. Let's say Oklahoma wins that game. Let's say Ohio State beats Michigan and doesn't play in Indianapolis. What kind of, now, you know, what happens there is the head-to-head probably wins out, but it creates an interesting discussing point about, okay, here's a team that won their championship, here's a team that didn't. That's what I'm really going to be curious about afterwards, is find out what kind of evaluation the committee is going to place on a conference championship team as opposed to one who didn't win a conference championship.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the difficulty of all of this, because when we say the committee, it's not one functioning body. It's 13 individuals with their own opinions casting their own little votes, and then, of course, you know, seeing what the plurality is on this. And I'm interested to see, too, which committee members think that the conference championship means more and which one thinks that, you know, who I think is the best team right now means more, even if they didn't win the conference. And if that's the case, Paul, and this is where we're just kind of, you know, being speculative, which is wonderful for talk radio. if we're just looking at which teams are the best teams right now, and the conference champions don't really mean very much, the championships don't mean very much, then we're almost to the point of what's the point of a conference and what's the point of striving to win it? Because I would probably say that right now, one of the four best teams in the country, the way they are playing right now and have been for the last probably 2 months, is a three-loss USC team. You know, a team that is probably not going to be able to win the Pac-12, but is probably better than anybody in the Pac-12 and probably more deserving of a spot, including, especially because they beat Washington a couple of weeks ago. I think USC is an extraordinarily dangerous team. I don't think anybody in the country would want to play them in the first round of a playoffs. So if the committee decides, or as the individuals, the votes come up the way that they do, that, you know, Ohio State gets in and the Big Ten champion, Wisconsin or Penn State, does not, you know, why do we not extend that to the West Coast and say, you know what, USC is better than the other teams, I think, right now. Forget about their three losses and non-conference championship. They're just the better team. And at that point, we kind of say, well, what is the value of the regular season championship at all?
Agreed. And, you know, those are the kind of things that we hear the people in the NCAA basketball tournament selection committees talk about with a team like USC, with a team like Oklahoma, and probably some others that could fall into that category. Certainly, you got to think Penn State would be a team that would be in that category. But Penn State might find themselves in a position, even if they were to win the Big Ten championship game, I don't know that there's an assurance that Penn State would get in, although, you know, their resume certainly would look better with a victory over, we would assume at this point, Wisconsin. So it's going to be a tough job for those people in that committee room deciding on these four teams.
What do you think if you were on that committee, what would sway you? Would you look at, and there's three elements, I think, probably to this. You know, the resume, let's see what quality wins you have over top 25 teams or difficult road wins, that sort of thing. The resume. Would it be that? Would it be the conference championship? If you don't even make it into the conference championship game, let alone win the conference championship game, how much does that weigh? Versus then, as we kind of just described, the eye test. You know, I think we would all say that by the eye test, Ohio State is better than Penn State. Yet, they didn't beat Penn State, and they didn't win the Eastern Conference, or in the Eastern Division of the Big Ten Conference, in this hypothetical. And they're not even going to play in the conference championship game. So there's the eye test. If you were on that committee, how would you rank those three things in your own determination of who you would vote for in the top four?
Boy, gee, that's a tough one. I wish I could give you a good answer on that, Bob. I think that you probably have to combine them all. Everybody wants to talk about non-conference schedule, and as you and I have discussed, sometimes that's something you can't necessarily control with how far ahead some of these non-conference games are scheduled.
Very true.
I wish I had a good answer for you for that one, Bob. I really don't.
Well, then let me simplify it a little bit, and we'll just kind of take the first one out because you sometimes can't control your schedule because of the way those things are done. But then let's just say it's a tiebreaker here. We're down to, a conference champion versus a non-conference champion, but in your eye test or with your own eye test, you think that that non-conference champion is a better team than the conference champion. Which way, and if you take Ohio State and Penn State out of it and just say generic team A and generic team B, they both have, let's say there's a one-loss team and a two-loss team. The two-loss team has the conference championship, but you really feel like the one-loss team is better. Which do you value more then, the eye test that tells you the non-champion is better or that reward for doing exactly what was supposed to be done in winning your conference, especially considering in order to do it, you beat the other team head-to-head?
If you have Ohio State and Penn State in it, the head-to-head has to mean something. It absolutely has to mean something. But if you're looking at a different scenario, I think some of it gets – that's where it takes us into trying to evaluate a team's loss. Who did they lose to? Where did they lose to them? At what point in the season was it? How did the game play out? I think that's something we've heard here in the last week, the discussion about what's a better loss for a team to have. Can you look at Ohio State's loss and say, well, it was on the road, but it was against an unranked team. It was a game in which you had a double-figure lead going into the fourth quarter. I think if you're looking at Ohio State in a situation with that, that's very dangerous for Ohio State. Penn State, I believe if I'm not mistaken, their two losses came on the road. One to Michigan, in which they were handled pretty easily, and then they've lost at Pitt, and I don't remember if that was a close game or not, but I'm just using those as an example. Oklahoma, you look at them, two losses, one on the road, one at home, and both of them were decisive losses, but they were also very early in the season, and you see now that they are a different football team than they were back then. Just to look at them for an example.
Sure.
If you look at Washington, they lost at home, but to a USC team who, as you said, is playing some very, very good football right now. So I think that's, if you look at the way you asked the question, then I think you start dissecting all of the particulars with a team's loss.
We're talking to Paul Keels. He is the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, and we're trying to having a little bit of fun here trying to figure out what the committee is going to do. And what one thing we do know is that with Michigan and Ohio State on Saturday, that settles a lot of things because the winner is going to remain alive, even though, as we pointed out, Michigan just is still alive. They still have another chance to lose in a Big Ten championship game. And Ohio State, if they win, probably, I think we can almost say, we can't say guaranteed, but we can say pretty doggone sure that they are going to be in. One of them is going to be out, and that we can say for sure. If Ohio State loses, mm-hmm. they are done. So let's break down this actual game now. We saw Michigan last week for the first time without Wilton Spade at quarterback. It didn't go well passing wise. They did run the heck out of the football in some pretty bad passing conditions anyway, as a lot of teams played in, including Ohio State and Michigan State. But they ran the heck out of the ball, but they just didn't get much from John O'Korn in place of Wilton Spade. It is almost a certainty that he will start again at the Horseshoe. Is there any chance, in your mind, from what you have seen, that they can figure out a way to move the ball through the air against the Ohio State defense with their backup quarterback, a spot in the championship playoffs possibly on the line?
Well, I think we have to remember that quarterback battle in the summer was a pretty close and went right down to the wire, if we were to believe what we were told.
That's what we were told. That's right.
Yes. And also understand, too, that John O'Korn, what I believe he passed for over 4,000 yards and a whole bunch of touchdowns in 2 years at Houston. So this is a kid that's played and has had some success playing football. So, but can he have some success? Absolutely. And I think a lot of that has to do with his targets. When you think about Amara Darbo and J.U. Chesson and Jake Butt, and as you said, Bob, Michigan ran the ball incredibly well against Indiana. This game's always going to come down, seemingly always comes down to things like the line of scrimmage and who can gain control, who can run the football successfully, who can stop the run. And I think regardless of who's playing quarterback for either team, that is going to be an important factor in this football game. For both teams, I think you somewhat have to disregard the passing difficulty because of the conditions that both teams played in last week. But somebody's going to have to make a key passing play. You know, Michigan's receivers certainly have shown they are more than capable of doing it. The Ohio State receiving game has been up and down this year without question. You know, we saw some incredible plays in the early portion of the season. We saw the passing game look really good against Nebraska and against Maryland. You know, again, you kind of throw out last week. But it's certainly going to come down to who is able to make the key passing play when they have to.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And you're right about Okorn. You're right about it being a close battle. And you're right about how he did at Houston. But at the end of the day, he hasn't played. You know, he hasn't played for this football team. He is not locked in with his receivers as far as timing and chemistry and where they like the ball and where they're going to be and the entire nine yards, the whole thing that we can talk about. So it is going to be a really, really big challenge for him to figure all of that out in the most hostile of environments, and that is in the horseshoe in this rivalry game. So that is such a big advantage for Ohio State. What about on the other side of the ball? Michigan's defense has been one of the very best in the country. Some might say the very best in the country. Some might say right there, you know, as a number two behind Alabama, certainly the best in the Big Ten. JT Barrett's going to have his work cut out for him. The good news is there isn't any precipitation called for in the forecast that I'm aware of, Paul. We know that the Buckeye passing game has struggled a little bit in the inclement weather. It's something that you can't really put your finger on and say, well, it's just JT can't throw in the snow. But it just kind of has bogged down. So how do you think the Buckeyes attack, considering that there will be relatively good weather, do they attack this outstanding Michigan defense?
You know, I think this is where Curtis Samuel becomes such an interesting factor in this football game. He's a guy that, you know, with everything he's done this year with all-purpose yards, running and catching, I think this is where he becomes a real X factor. You know, and he didn't get used a lot, or at least as much as we would have expected in the Michigan State game because of the elements. But this is where he could be a guy that could change a game, whether it's catching a pass out of the backfield, whether it's a screen pass. And then Mike Weber has been on such a good roll running the football, going north and south. But this is where you get interested in seeing how Curtis Samuel can play, and especially how this offensive line can handle that Michigan defense that has played so well. That's been a big difference the last couple of years in this Michigan-Ohio State game. You haven't seen Michigan play on either line of the scrimmage the way you expected to see them, the way they traditionally had. That's where, at least to the eyeball test, that's where this team this year, both on the offensive line and the defensive line for Michigan, from watching them on TV, seems to make a big difference. So, you know, that's going to be the big challenge for Ohio State on both lines, as well as they've played in a lot of cases, being able to do it against this team, and as well as they've played in those particular areas. That's going to be crucial. But to answer your question at the start, I think Curtis Samuel becomes the X factor in all of this for Ohio State, Bob.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and he certainly has been the most explosive guy in the last few weeks for the Buckeyes. How do you think they handled Jabril Peppers, talking about the Ohio State offense? Because he can do so many things. He can come at you from so many different places, line up in so many different positions, and just make plays. Do you think they'll have any kind of a special blocking scheme for him or a way to attack to maybe decoy him away from plays? Because he's the kind of guy that it seems, if Michigan is to win, he's going to have a big hand in it. He's going to be poised to create a turnover. Whether it's a big pick or a big hit and a forced fumble, he just does so many different things. How do you suppose they deal with him?
Well, I think from an offensive standpoint, again, it goes back to Curtis Samuel. They practice against him every day, and he's the kind of guy that brings the same type of things. And I don't believe we've seen Peppers throw the ball as of yet, although last week I know there was a play where it looked like he was going to throw. From a defensive standpoint, you know, I think it's basically down to fundamentals. What looks most impressive about Jabril Peppers, is how he closes on plays, how quickly he gets to a runner that's trying to get around the edge, or how quickly he can get into the backfield. And then the other thing you've got to account for, Bob, is him on special teams with his return ability. But I think that's where Ohio State and teams like this benefit from practicing against good talent every day. And certainly it helps Michigan doing the same thing, too. They saw a lot of Jabril Peppers last year in the game up in Ann Arbor. He, to the best of my recollection, he didn't have any big plays in that game. So it's not like it's the first time they've gone against him, unlike the first time they've seen him. So this is somebody that whether they do something special, whether it's a guy like Jerome Baker that kind of spies on him when he comes in on offense, certainly whether a tight end has to be more watchful for him coming around the edge, this is a guy they know they're going to have to account for.
Last thing, we'll let you run, Paul, and get ready for Thanksgiving. By the way, you got a game tonight. I know. Do you have the cooking at your house or the big? Excuse me. Let me rephrase that. Do you have the big Thanksgiving Day celebration at your house? Is Mrs. Keels doing the cooking, or do you guys visit a family member?
Well, first off, there is no Mrs. Keel. So
oh, I did. Apologies.
No, not a problem. Not a problem. There are candidates auditioning, but there is none. No, I'm joking with you, Bob. What I'll do is I'll slip down to Cincinnati, my hometown, and catch up with some family members for the day and then come back in the evening. So dealing with basketball tonight, there's also a basketball game Friday night, too. So having to deal with those things. But it'll be nice to have a day to kind of decompress. As you can imagine, it's been a meat grinder of a schedule with the overlap of football and basketball.
Sure.
And it'll be nice to kind of just have a little downtime.
Yeah, no, understood. I'm picturing the American Idol countdown. America voted, and we're going to find the winning audition for the role of Mrs. Gills. No, we'll let you get out of your way here, Paul. After this one, I'll let you go. You mentioned Mike Weber, and you certainly talked about the X Factor, Curtis Samuels. You're 100% right about that. But we cannot say enough, or at least I can't, and I want you to, about Mike Weber. This is really amazing to think about. He is now the third Buckeye freshman to ever go over 1,000 yards. You think about all of the unbelievable backs to come through the Ohio State factory. You know, going back to Archie, of course, winning his two Heismans, and going back to Eddie George and all these great players. But Robert Smith did it in 1990, 1,126 yards. Maurice Clarett with 1,237 in that 2002 national championship season, and now Mike Weber. It's hard to do because you know how those guys turned out, both in their Ohio State careers and then beyond. But how do you compare Mike Weber to those guys from what you recall?
Well, I think that, and it's important to point out, too, that Mike Weber is a redshirt freshman, so he did have last year to develop a little bit in the program. But
sure.
an incredible accomplishment for a young man who came in from the state of Michigan, who had to deal with a little bit of an injury last year, and even during the middle portion of this year was dealing with a little bit of a shoulder problem. But, the impressive thing about him is just how physically he's handled the toll, how he's just been north and south and positive yards. But the thing that both he and Curtis Samuel have had to embrace is following up what was set by Carlos Hyde and by Ezekiel Elliott.
Sure.
And that's doing all of the things that they want them to do away from the ball, blocking, pass protecting. And he's done an outstanding job of that. It really has added to what makes Ohio State dangerous on offense with all the things we know JT Barrett, that he can do, with all the things that we just talked about with Curtis Samuel. And then here you've got your prototypical bad weather Big Ten type tailback who can just go north and south and get you positive yardage. He's been an unsung hero of this football team.
No question about it. And boy, if anybody is more motivated than he is, I don't know who it would be, given the way things worked out with his recruiting and coming from Cass Tech, of course, up there in Detroit and being committed to the Wolverines and then going to the Buckeyes and then all of the stuff about maybe he's thinking twice because the running backs coach left. And all that stuff was very unique in the recruiting wars. And I know he's going to want to, come out victorious in the first time as a starter in his first matchup against the Wolverines, especially with so much on the table. Paul Keels, enjoy the holiday, enjoy the basketball games, and then obviously we will all enjoy hearing your call on Saturday of Ohio State Michigan at the Horseshoe. And thanks so much for your time.
Sounds good. You guys have a good holiday too, Bob.
Thank you, Paul. Enjoy. Thank you, sir. All right, it is 3:34. There's the great Paul Keels, the voice of the Buckeyes. You'll hear that game, of course, right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Just a tremendous, tremendous play-by-play guy and great analyst, obviously, as well. Okay. Now, that's the Buckeye side of things as we bring you Buckeye-Wolverine coverage all week long right here on The Ticket, and a lot of great analysis and thoughts on how this thing is going to go. Coming up in a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to Nick Baumgartner, who's going to go to the other side. He is a Wolverines beat writer covering that team for MLive.com. Nick Baumgartner provides the maize and blue perspective of this game as we continue this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling on our weed is 3:42. Thanks to Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, for giving us a look at the big rivalry game on Saturday from the Scarlet and Gray perspective. And now it's time to go to the other side, the dark side, if you are an Ohio State fan. But, of course, we speak of the maize and blue, and joining us now, covering the Wolverines for MLive.com. Once again, we say good afternoon to Nick Baumgartner right here on The Ticket. Hey, Nick, how are you?
Good, Bob. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for coming back and talking a little Michigan football with us as we get ready for the rivalry game. Last night, the standings came out again, or not the standings. They're not standings. They're supposed to be re-ranked every week. The committee says they don't take any previous rankings into consideration. It's just how they see them right now. And they didn't change from last week. 1 through 4, it is Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, and Clemson. Any problem with the way things are shaping up from the committee right now as far as the top four?
No, I mean, I can't see why it'd be any different. But again, I think it's important to note that it doesn't matter. I mean, none of it matters until that selection day. There's still, there's not a lot of football left, but there's still important football left, I should say. And I'm sure it won't look like this in 2 weeks. And that's probably the most important thing to remember.
Yeah, of course, the winner of the Ohio State and Michigan game is still alive in the playoff hunt, and the loser is pretty much out of it. Well, this is something I was talking about with Paul Keels, and I've talked about for a couple of days now, about the fairness factor. How do fans up in Michigan who bleed maize and blue, how do they feel about the fact, when you break it down, that Ohio State has to win one game to make it into the playoff? They just have to beat Michigan, and they're in the playoff because they're number two. And there's no way, if they beat the number three team in the country in terms of the CFP rankings, that they're going to fall from 2 to 5 under any circumstances. So if they beat Michigan, they're in. But for Michigan to get in, they not only have to beat number two, then they got to go beat another team, number 6 or 7, which is where Wisconsin and Penn State are ranked right now. So they've got to win two more in order. Well, it would be Wisconsin. They got to win two more in order to make the playoff, where the Buckeyes have to win just the one.
Well, I mean, I think if you look at it objectively, you say that Ohio State's other loss is better than Michigan's other loss. I mean, Ohio State lost to Penn State, who's done some good things and is ranked pretty highly in that poll right now. And Iowa, who Michigan lost to, is nowhere to be found. So bad loss for Michigan. The Penn State loss for Ohio State doesn't look so bad. I could argue.
But the flip side of that, of course, if you're a Michigan fan, would be what? That Michigan took that Penn State team that beat them by 39.
Yeah, they beat the pants off them. And I could also argue that given Michigan's resume here, and if they were to beat Ohio State and get to the Big Ten championship game and play a number 6 or number 5 or whatever Wisconsin team, that they might be in anyway, given the fact that, you know, how the Pac-12 shakes out. They've got to win over Colorado, they've got to win over Penn State, they've already got to win over Wisconsin, and then at that point they'd have one over Ohio State. So that's four in the top 9, 4 in the top 10 right there. Nobody else has that. So one more win, I don't know if it'd be a lock, but not like it would be for Ohio State maybe, but one more win for Michigan, and I think you'd be they'd have an argument no matter what happened in that Big Ten title game, but I guess we'll have to see it play out.
That would be very, very curious, because what you would have then in that circumstance, and this is all hypothetical, obviously, you would have Michigan losing probably to Wisconsin in the championship game, giving them their second loss. Wisconsin, sitting there at number 6 right now, would have just beaten number 3, and they also have 2 losses. They would have avenged the one of the 2 that they had, which would have been against Michigan. I kind of feel like that it pretty much would be if the Big Ten was going to get 2 teams. You know, like you said, depending on what happens with Washington, it would be the conference champion, Wisconsin, in that scenario, and Ohio State, not the team that lost the conference championship game.
Well, I think at that point, I don't know how, well, I mean, I argue this. I mean, if Michigan beats Ohio State and loses to Wisconsin in the championship game, then how do you put Ohio State in over? How do you put Ohio State over Michigan, though, that they just lost to them at home? So
that's
would be
a great point. Yeah, that would be the argument. I kind of was forgetting about the Ohio State having their second loss now.
Right. So
that would be such a strange scenario because you'd have 3 teams there, technically 4 teams, with 2 losses at the top of the Big Ten. Ohio State, Michigan, in that weird scenario, Ohio State, Michigan, Wisconsin, Penn State would all have 2 losses. And again, I really can't imagine, 2 teams having those 2 losses getting in unless some really weird things happen out west.
Yeah, that would be the key. The Pac-12 would have to go haywire. And USC, I think, could make some things happen there, but we'll have to wait and see. And bottom line, though, for both teams, Michigan and Ohio State, you got to win this one. You got to win this one to feel safe and everything else. And it's a must win. It's the biggest game Michigan's had in easily a decade, and I would argue maybe longer. I think this is just the beyond a must win for them. They've got to get this done.
Who's the best team in the country not named Alabama? Right now, today, looking at it with just your eye test, forget about who wins the conference, forget about who beat whom head-to-head. Just right now, as you watch and you look at as much as you can, as much as we all can, we can't watch every game, but if you look at Ohio State, Michigan, Clemson, Washington, Wisconsin, Penn State, Oklahoma, just to round it out, the top 10 are then Colorado and Oklahoma State. Who's the best team in the country, in your mind, right now, today, not named Alabama?
Yeah, based on resume, it's Michigan or Ohio State. It's whoever wins that game, in my opinion, is your number two team. Based on what they've done, based on who they played, based on how they performed, you know, everyone's entitled to their rough games. Michigan and Ohio State both had a loss. Michigan's only had one other close game against a team that was supposed to hammer, and they've hammered everybody else. So same thing for Ohio State. Other than one game, they've done everything they're supposed to do, but they haven't been in too many situations where they've had to pull things out of the fire. So that would be my vote. I know a lot of people are on the USC train from the eye test perspective of how well they're playing, but at the same time, I can't discount three losses. I mean, USC decided not to play for the first quarter of the season, and to me, that still matters. So, beyond Alabama, I would say that the two best resumes, right now are Michigan and Ohio State. The winner of that game, should be the second team right there behind Alabama.
Nick Baumgartner joining the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza. He is with MLive.com covering the Wolverines. Jim Cushlin is here alongside as well. Cush, go ahead.
And obviously one of the funny side stories that's going on this week, Nick, is the status of the quarterback. A lot of us have been thinking it'll be O'Korn again due to Wilson Spate's injuries. But Harbaugh being Harbaugh, he's not really saying exactly how it's going to go. There is some that have seen Wilton Spate actually out there trying to get back into gear. What exactly is going on? Or is this just something we won't really know until Saturday?
Well, I think Wilton Spate's going to try and give it a go. I don't know why you'd give him reps in practice if there was no way he could play. That doesn't make any sense to me, considering the fact that I think John O'Korn would need every single rep he could get based on last week's performance. So from all I can gather, I think Wilton Spate's going to try and give it a go. I mean, it's going to depend on how much pain he can withstand, what his doctor says, and everything else. But, if the thing happened tomorrow, I think Wilton would give it a go and maybe under center for that first snap. I think that that injury that he had that people reported on was nowhere near as serious as originally anticipated. Certainly an injury, the one he'll have to gut through, and he won't be 100%. But given the fact that he is practicing and he has taken reps, that's a fact. That leads me to believe that he's going to give everything he has or every shot or every whatever to give it a go and go out there and try and play on Saturday.
Would you do that if you were Jim Harbaugh, Nick? And I ask that with this in mind. It would be really inspirational, maybe for a minute, kind of like Willis Reed going back to, 1969?
Yeah.
But you know that he's one hard shot away from leaving the game. And if he takes a hard shot on the shoulder, even if it's not, just a regular tackle, but he hits the ground wrong, he's out of the game because of the way, the way that injury, depending on what we really know about it, and we don't know a ton. We don't know what we can believe as far as how serious it is. You know, we were told broken collarbone, and I was saying not. But the point is, it's going to be precarious. It's going to be like a really razor-thin margin. And if you do end up losing him in the first quarter to his first hard hit or drive into the ground, now you got O'Korn coming in a relief situation as opposed to with the confidence of, hey, John, we believe in you. We're starting you this Saturday.
I think it all depends on really what the injury is. And, again, we don't know the details completely of the injury. If it's a situation where he could injure it worse, then, no, I wouldn't do it. Because that's one more hit, like you say, would make it worse. And then you're talking about, losing him for longer, and maybe even impacting next year for all we know. So I wouldn't do it in that case. But if it's a situation where it's sore, it's a bump and a bruise or whatever you want to call it, you're not going to do anything to make it worse. It's just something you're going to have to grit through. And if he's your best quarterback, which he has been all year, and everyone knows that, John O'Korn knows that, frankly. Because if you remember back before the Iowa game, Wilton Spate might have been, if he ended the game after nine games, he might have been the All-Big Ten's first or second team quarterback the way he was performing. So if Wilton Spate is healthy enough and is in a situation where he can't hurt his shoulder worse than it already is, then I'd play him. But if it's a situation where one more hit, like you say, is going to do more damage, then no, I would not. For me, it would just be about the health of the kid. It wouldn't be about anything else. And I'm sure that's how they'll handle it.
And to be clear, Nick, I wasn't talking about put him in harm's way for making his career, putting his career in jeopardy and harming him worse. I just mean that he can't go, he's going to get knocked out of the game and thus the impact on the backup quarterback in this case having to come in that circumstance other than other than starting the game. Let's flip it over and just talk about the Ohio State offense for a minute. You know, they struggle. Again, I don't know what it is Mark D'Antonio does, but he just kind of creates problems for JT Barrett and for the Ohio State offense. They had put up 62 points in back-to-back weeks against Nebraska and Maryland, and then they barely escaped with a one-point win against Michigan State at East Lansing. Now, I know that the circumstances there with the weather, of course, impact the ability to put a lot of points on the board, but as I said, you know, they just don't seem to be clicking on all cylinders when they play D'Antonio. Which Ohio State offense do you expect to see Saturday against one of the best defenses in the country? The one that put up back-to-back 62s or the one that struggled last week at East Lansing?
Yeah, I don't know if Mark D'Antonio controls the weather. That's my bigger question. It seems like every time Michigan State and Ohio State play, it's a blizzard or a snowstorm or rain.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Or whatever.
It does impact him. There's no doubt.
Right, of course. But, no, I mean, I don't know. I would expect them to be better on Saturday. I can't remember a time when I've been covering Michigan that Ohio State hasn't given Michigan its best game from an offensive standpoint. I would expect them to be at their best, considering the opponent, considering what Michigan's done, considering the stakes and everything else. I don't know if they'll put up 62, given the fact that Michigan's defense is pretty good, but I would expect them to be better. I'd expect them to make plays. And, you know, I don't think there's going to be weather. It seems like every time there's wind, J.T. Barrett can't throw the ball, but I don't think there's going to be any crazy wind. So, yeah, I would expect them to be better. I would expect Ohio State's offense to be what it is, and I would expect Michigan's defense to be what it is. And that's why this is fun, because we'll find out, you know, which is better, that defense or that offense.
Which is better, in your mind, Nick, as we go into this thing? And will the game be decided on that? I guess I'm kind of asking you for your prediction now, but, you know, is Ohio State's offense better than Michigan's defense, which are the strength of their teams, or maybe the game is decided on the flip side with what Wilton Spate or Alcorn is able to do against Ohio State's defense? But from either perspective, how do you see that shaking out and who wins?
Yeah, I think it's decided on the flip. I think that Michigan's defense is good enough to keep Ohio State's offense somewhat in check, but I think Ohio State's offense is also good enough to score some points against anybody they play. So I think that almost might be a push in some ways, but I think it's decided on the other side. And you know, the reason why I picked Ohio State is you just don't know what to expect from Michigan's offense. You know, two weeks ago at Iowa, when it was healthy, that was the worst game he played all season. Last week, John O'Corn wasn't exactly scintillating, and now all of a sudden, you know, this offense doesn't look like the offense that put up, you know, was putting up 50, 60 points, it seemed like every week for the first 8 or 9 weeks of the season. So I think it's decided on the other side of the ball. I think it's, you know, it's whether or not Michigan's offensive line can control the trenches, can move the football, and whether or not somebody can create something of a passing game. Michigan can't win the game one-dimensionally. Can't do it. It's not going to work. So, you know, it's Michigan's offense against Ohio State's defense. The winner of that one, that battle there is, in my opinion, going to win the game.
And that will be whom?
I've got Ohio State. I picked Ohio State this week. I think that, again, I have too many questions right now about Michigan's offense, where it's at, especially the passing game and the health of Wilton Spate and everything else. Too many questions there. And Ohio State's defense is certainly formidable. They're not missing anybody. So, you know, in that sense, I'll pick Ohio State. They're also at home. I think that's a factor as well. But, you know, that's why they play them, and I suppose we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think that's a very fair assessment. I have too many questions as well myself. I haven't actually gone out with a score yet, but I also think Ohio State is going to win this game. And I think there are a lot of factors for that, and you hit on a number of them. Nick Baumgartner, that's why we have you on. We really appreciate that deep, insightful analysis, and we certainly appreciate following you on MLive.com as well. So, Nick Baumgartner, thanks so much. Happy Thanksgiving Eve to you, and hope you have a great holiday and enjoy the game on Saturday.
All right, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much, Nick. Nick Baumgartner joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, before I do anything else, I want to do a couple of things here. While we talk about all of these great college athletes, we want to shine a spotlight on the high school kids who are doing great work on their own chosen fields of play or courts, as the case might be. And that means it's time to recognize the KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week for this week. And for the girls, want to say great job to Taylor Haberland of Bedford Volleyball. And Taylor, if it's Haberland, I apologize, but you know who you are. Taylor led the team with 35 digs, but the Kicking Mules did fall to Rockford in 5 sets on Friday in the Michigan Class A state semifinals. Haberland also led the team during the season in digs. Great job individually by Taylor and by her whole team. And then for the boys, how about Mike Warren once again? The Central Catholic running back Again, outstanding, 33 carries, 214 yards, two touchdowns, and a tough 19-0 win for Central Catholic against Lexington in the regional final. Mike Warren, now number five all-time in Ohio with 7,600-plus career rushing yards, and he's tied for seventh all-time with 115 rushing touchdowns for his career. Central Catholic is not done yet, neither is Mike. Once again, he'll be on the field Saturday against Trotwood Madison for the Division III state semifinal and a berth in another state championship game. So congratulations to Taylor and Mike. They are your girls and boys high school athletes of the week. And Jim Cushlin, if somebody would like to nominate, basketball season is just about to get started. If somebody would like to nominate a great high school athlete doing great things on their respective fields, how do they do that?
Just send a little email with your nomination to athlete at 1065theticket.com.
Sounds like a plan. Athlete at 1065theticket. Tell us who they are and what they're doing, and we will indeed recognize them. By the way, I also want to help you out with something cool. You know, Christmas time is here. It is time to start shopping. If you have not already started, Black Friday, 2 days away. But I'm going to help you out. We've got our own kind of Black Friday deal going on right now with the My Toledo auction online and in effect right now. It runs through the 29th, which is Tuesday at 10 a.m., so it's a little less than a week. You've got an opportunity to bid on some outstanding merchandise from some of our wonderful sponsors and clients. And guess what? If you bid correctly, you're going to get some deals where you pay pennies on the dollar for some outstanding merchandise, services, and products. For example, a one-year membership of golf at Brandywine you can get for just pennies on the dollar. How about a $500 gift certificate to Car Stereo One? Who is on your list that would really, really love an outstanding gift from Car Stereo One? How about a year of childcare? This is less of a present and more of trying to save money. A year of childcare and educational services. You can save so much money on so many different items and services online right now at 1065theticket.com. Just click My Toledo Auction. New items, by the way, are being added every day. So visit every day to check not only on your bid, but also on new items that might be there, as you can save yourself a ton of money during this very, very expensive buying season right now at 1065theticket.com. And the My Toledo auction. All right, we are at straight up 4 o'clock. Let's get ourselves a top of the hour sports center. We'll come back and take some of your phone calls. Coming up at 4:30, by the way, or roughly 4:30 or so, we are going to talk more college football with Jason Candle, the head coach of the UT Rockets. The Rockets take on Western Michigan in a showdown for the MAC West Championship and a spot in the MAC Championship game at Ford Field up in Detroit. So Coach Candle will be joining us at about 4:35 or so right here on the ticket as well. Hour number two coming up right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Obviously, it's a big one because it's the next game on our schedule. That's the way we think about it. But it is a division game at our place on Thanksgiving. I mean, there's no getting around that. I expect it to be an awesome atmosphere, both teams playing at a high level and a really good game. It's obviously, from a game planning standpoint, at least you're familiar. You know, they're fresh in your mind from just a couple weeks ago. And it doesn't diminish the challenge that the Minnesota Vikings give us. You know, a really good defense, a really good team, and really well coached. So we'll have our hands full as far as a preparation standpoint. It doesn't seem like too long ago I was looking at film of these guys anyway. The goal every week is to be, you know, efficient and explosive in the run game. You know, some weeks we've achieved that goal and others we haven't. Obviously, last week wasn't good enough. The good thing about playing on a Thursday is you kind of get to go out there, you know, quickly redeem yourself.
It's very important. I don't know how many wins we got this decade. It'd be very important, and it's especially important for our season. This determines who's going to go to the Big Ten Championship. It's a big stake at hand, and we just got to go out there and prepare. It's a great year historically when Ohio State and Michigan are, you know, the top guest competitors for a national championship. And it's just good for the Big Ten. You know, I'm just glad that the historic tradition of the Big Ten is, you know, I guess, restored.
We all know what it means. And then you add in the fact it's number two versus number three, Big Ten Championship, and possible college football playoff berth is on the line. You know, nothing needs to be said. I remember my freshman year, I came into the practice. Coach Oak whispered something in my ear that got me really, really fired up. And I remember I was running faster than I had all the whole entire season, the whole entire week of practice. And I played one of the best games of my career that week. You know, every guy's different a little bit, but all that, you know, each person has to do is make sure that they're ready to play. And we're going to need to be at our best for that game.
No matter what the record is, whenever we play, you know, it's always going to be a battle. You can take the records and throw them out. You can take the seasons and just throw them out, honestly. At this time of the year, it's all about one thing, and it's just beat the team up north. The records being as good as they are on both sides, you know, it does intensify the game a little bit more.
Yeah, I remember watching as a little young buck watching Troy and Ted play one versus two. They always have good players, you know, a good team, regardless of the record. They're one of those programs that can always get top talent.
Good football team. We don't like them. They don't like us. It's going to be a rough and tough football game. But you know, it's always one of those hard-fought battles. You do have respect for your opponent always and understand that they're a good football team. Yeah, we don't like each other, but there's still, you know, respect for the game.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed that and much, much more. Thanks so much for being a part of it. We are Toledo Sports Leader, and we appreciate you spending some of your Thanksgiving Eve with us. Kush, what's the Thanksgiving tradition at the Cushland House? Is Mrs. K making the meal, or are we going to one of the in-laws' homes for a Thanksgiving feast tomorrow? What's the story?
Well, we are hanging here for this year, and we're all going to help. Me and the little five-year-old, we're all going to pitch in and help. So that should be fun and interesting.
Well, very nice. Have you ever done that before?
I don't know how helpful I've ever been before. Let's put it that way.
Well, no matter how it works out, I hope you enjoy it. We're going to enjoy a lot of football. On looking at Thanksgiving Day games, we were talking about this a little bit yesterday. Three very, very interesting matchups, all of which have playoff implications for all six opponents. And I don't know the last time we were able to say that. We're literally all six teams that are playing on Thanksgiving Day have playoff aspirations. Usually it's the, you mentioned this yesterday, Kush, usually it's the Lions that kind of stops that from being the reality. Because they're out of it by this point in time. By Thanksgiving, they just play the ceremonial Thanksgiving Day game, and everybody yawns at it because it's the Lions. But that's not the case now, because the Lions and the Vikings are tied atop the NFC North at 6-4. They face off tomorrow on Thanksgiving Day. The winner is, of course, now in control of the North Division. The Packers are two games behind both of them and just seemingly a lost cause at this particular moment in time. If you look at the other matchups in the NFC East, you have the Dallas Cowboys taking on the Washington Redskins. The Cowboys' best record in football at 9-1. The Redskins at 6-3-1. A win there puts them at 7-3-1 against the Cowboys at 9-2, and they are a game and a half apart. And the Redskins are flat out surging. They are 6-1-1 in their last eight games. They're for real. The New York Giants separate those two teams at 7-3, right there in the number two spot. So of course they're a factor. And then, of course, in the nightcap, you have the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that would be the nightcap, meaning the primetime 8:30 game. The Pittsburgh Steelers tied for first in the AFC North with the Baltimore Ravens at 5-5, which is craptacular. But it is, you know, it's a team that's tied for the top of their division, as bad as it is, and thus a huge game. And then for the Indianapolis Colts, they only trail the Texans, despite all of their struggles. They only trail the Texans by a game. They're six, or the Texans are 6-4, and the Colts are 5-5. So a win puts them possibly, by the time the end of the weekend comes around on Sunday, in a tie for first place in the AFC South. So all of those games are of big magnitude from a playoff standpoint, which I really think is going to make it an awful lot of fun to watch games on Thursday, tomorrow. But I want to talk a little bit about that primetime game between the Steelers and the Indianapolis Colts. And the reason why is because of Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck has been declared out, officially ruled out as of today for tomorrow's game because of a concussion. He did not practice all week long after suffering the concussion on a sack in the fourth quarter of Sunday's game against Tennessee. And as such, he is not able to get out of the protocol in time to be cleared to play the game. A few different issues arise from that. Number one is, how should the NFL approach Thursday football if it's going to cost playoff teams? Now, I know we're talking about Thanksgiving here, and that's always a tradition, but that should be, in my opinion, the one Thursday day of football that they have every year is Thanksgiving, and that should be it. But now that you see late in a season, a team that is fighting for its playoff lives, they're 10 games in with six to go, and they don't have their starting quarterback. They don't have one of the star quarterbacks in the league because he couldn't quite get out of the concussion protocol in time. Now, do I know for a fact that had they played on Sunday, he could have? No, I don't. But I do know that he was considered questionable as of yesterday. It was a borderline thing. He would have to be cleared by the doctors by today in order to be able to play for tomorrow. And since they're playing the game so early, he can't do that. If it would have been Sunday, there's a chance he would have been cleared by Friday or Saturday. And now they have him for, you know, this very, very important game against another playoff contender. So I wonder if that isn't reason for the NFL to pause and to look at these Thursday games that everybody hates. And let me say that again. Everybody hates. The players around the league hate playing on a short week. We just played on Sunday, or in the Redskins' case, played on Sunday night. They don't even have the benefit of the whole rest of that day off. And then they gotta heal up their wounds on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and we're back at it on Thursday. It's just, in my estimation, too much. The players hate it. The coaches hate it because of the game planning and preparation has to suffer. Your schedules are all off. And judging by the attendance, or not the attendance, beg your pardon, by the viewership and the ratings, the fans hate it. They're not watching. Now, they will tomorrow because it is, again, Thanksgiving. I'm trying to make a point here about all Thursday football, not specific to tomorrow. Fans will watch plenty of football because it's what we do on Thanksgiving. We sit there, we make pigs out of ourselves, we have to unbutton our pants and ends up halfway down to let our guts kind of bulge out a little bit so we're not sitting there cramping, and then we watch football. About a half an hour after the cramps go away, then we're back in there grabbing leftovers and we're still watching football. I'm not talking about tomorrow, but in general, is this what's in the best interest of the health of the National Football League players? How will the Players Association feel about this when they find out that star players could possibly get out of concussion protocol, for example, in time for a Sunday game, but not for a Thursday game? And here's the league trying to squeeze every last bleeding nickel that they can out of their product, trying to put games in primetime on Thursday. They're going to put them in that position anyway. There's got to come a point where, what are we? Are we just making money at every turn, no matter what the consequences, and that's our goal, is profit, 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 profit? Or are we, and do we mean what we say when we try to tell the fans in this of this league, we really, really, truly do care about the health of the players? By the way, never mind the fact that the commissioner of the league has been pushing for an 18-game regular season schedule for the last 5 years or more. And never mind the fact that they're making them play on short notice, or not short notice, but short rest and recovery on Thursdays, all for profit. So do you care about this health and the well-being and the safety of the players, or do you not? In my estimation, what's happening here to Andrew Luck should be kind of a call to arms, if you will. And I use that term figuratively, not literally, obviously. But a call to arms saying, you know what, we can't do this. We cannot force these teams to play on short notice and put these guys' health at risk the way that we are. Not on short notice, on short rest, as I say. So Kush, first of all, thoughts on that. Do you think that the NFL should really start considering, again, not for tomorrow, Thanksgiving, this is just an unfortunate situation for Andrew Luck, but his unfortunate situation could be taken to at least evaluate and judge other Thursday football games that are not traditional Thanksgiving Day games. Do we really care about the players? Should they be playing on such short rest and recovery? Or is that just kind of flying in the face of the stated goal that we want to look out for these guys?
And that's an interesting point to bring up, too. And first of all, let me start this by saying, in terms of Thanksgiving itself, obviously I agree with you, we're not talking about that. In fact, I like how in the last decade they've said, you know, we got to add one more game for the nightcap in addition to whoever the Lions are playing and whoever the Cowboys are playing.
Definitely.
I've loved that ever since they did it. Now, in general, since we're now in the era where there is a Thursday night game every week, except I think week 17.
Correct.
17 is the only one that doesn't have.
Because they're going into the playoffs then, and they can't make somebody play like that.
Right, right. And that's also the only week where there's no Monday night game either. The extra gag here is not so much how it messes with schedule or this specific lining up of something like Andrew Luck not being able to play, and I think Vegas must have got wind of it, because I'm now seeing the Steelers are 7.5-point road favorites now for this one. I somehow think that wouldn't have been as high if Andrew Luck was still playing. But
I think you're right.
The fact is that since it's a Thursday night, if you have a bad matchup, like let's say, Bob, the game we had too much fun talking about on the airways and then did our best not to actually watch live, that Browns-Ravens game a couple of weeks ago, right?
Oh, yeah.
once you put somebody in a Thursday night, you can't just say halfway through the season, well, your matchup is garbage, so we're going to move you to Sunday and move somebody else to Thursday. You can't do that because of how the calendar lines up.
Right.
Like, we're now in the position, for example, that they can swap out a game if it's a Sunday night game. I could actually attest to that. The original Sunday night game that they said for August is not what it's going to be this weekend. It's now Kansas City Denver because standings are dictating that. So you don't have the mobility to move a bad possible viewership game like that Browns Ravens game. You don't have the ability to move that back to a Sunday and put somebody else on that Thursday. That just nobody would want to have to do that for calendar purposes. And it is, and because there is an unwritten rule, and I say unwritten because they're trying to get between Thursday night and Monday night and Sunday night, they try to get everybody in the league at least one of those primetime games, hence the Browns a couple weeks ago. Sure. Otherwise, nobody else would have touched them this year. That's before we even had the 0-16 possibility. But the other thing is, I would be in favor of obviously chopping a lot of these Thursday games, you know, off. You don't need them week in, week out. Maybe a couple here and there. Like, I kind of like the concept here's one example. When the season opens, there's that Thursday night game that's usually a pretty good matchup, at least on paper, that they play. That can be one that I would be okay keeping because you wouldn't be coming back. Those teams wouldn't be coming back from a short week or anything like that because it's week one. That's one example. But a lot of these Thursday games we probably could do without for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, I think almost all of them with the exception of Thanksgiving. I'd have to really think about what you just said about, you know, some of the ones that you could keep. But to me, it's got to be about making the game safer for the players if that's what they're going to preach.
Right.
You know, it's not just about the quality of the play and about the scheduling and about how much money can be made and about the, you can't have a flex schedule, although I wish you could and switch bad teams from those games to other ones. It's about the players. Nobody should have to come back on that short of a week. You know, it's one thing to play Monday night and then have to play on Sunday. You have one less day of rest than everybody else. But if you're playing a game on Sunday and then playing on Thursday, you have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to get ready for another opponent. First of all, from a strategic X's and O's game planning standpoint, but you only have those 3 days to recover from the brutality that is an NFL game on the field from a physical standpoint. And that's very, very important as far as you know, the health of these guys. Andrew Luck's head issue, his concussion, should be one of those kind of jumping off points where they say, guys, you know, one of the premier players in the league couldn't play, you know, in week 12 because, you know, they played Sunday and then they had him playing on Thursday.
Right.
And he was another day or two away from being out of the concussion protocol, but we played him early. We're hurting ourselves. And in the process, most importantly, we're not doing what we said we wanted to do, and that's taking care of these players,
yeah,
giving them enough rest and recuperation and recovery time as possible.
And another possibility, and a caller just called in and threw this one out there, and it's okay, so I'll at least bring it up, is if you're going to continue to do Thursday nights, well, then at bare minimum, you'd have to chop off the Thursday night games at the very beginning of the season and very end of the season, i.e. the time period where nobody is on bye week. The only time it would even make semi-sense to have a game on a Thursday night is if you're coming off a bye week. And a lot of the things you're just talking about, especially in this specific Andrew Luck case, wouldn't be there because you'd be coming off the bye week. Well, that at bare minimum, if they were even entertained just that, well, that means at least the first 4 weeks and the last 4 weeks there would be no Thursday games because everybody's done with their byes or hadn't started them yet.
Right.
That's one possibility, but then you're still left with the other questions of, does it potentially in week 9 become a bad matchup because one of the teams thought to be better is just awful, and then you lose viewership and things like that? So that doesn't even solve many of the problems, but if health and things like that is one of them, then the only sane way to do it is teams who play Thursday night should be coming off a bye the week before.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. That's the only way to do it is if they are coming off a bye. That's sensible. That's a reasonable way to continue to play football on Thursdays. But I would also caution, just to say this, you know, one of the problems with the ratings in my mind, and I've talked about it many times, and I don't mean to beat the dead horse here, but is oversaturation of the product. What makes or what made football the dominant animal that it is in the sports world, it, to me, is its rarity. You don't have 162 games. You don't have 82 games. You got 16 games. You got, you know, for each team. And you're only playing pretty much once a week, or then you have the Monday games. To me, you build up that anticipation. I can't wait for Sunday. I can't wait for Sunday. And now it's like, I don't have to. I got Thursday. And to me, it oversaturates the product.
Yeah.
So that's just another angle to this.
And exactly, Bob, the oversaturation is another great point, and it's something the NFL actually has to be conscious of in a way that, say, certain conferences, Mid-American, in college football don't, because there's so many. And, you know, as we know, part of the reason that the MAC does those MACtion games is because it's some of the only ways to get them on national TV, because you're just drowned out on the middle of a Saturday afternoon. But the NFL doesn't and shouldn't have that kind of problem.
No, they absolutely should not. I think that's very fair to say. So, hey, I wanted to throw one other thing in there if I can, just real quick, about that game and about the Andrew Luck situation. I read this story yesterday, and I wanted to talk about it, and I didn't have a time to, or didn't have enough time to. And I know I only have about 2 minutes now because we have to clear room for Coach Jason Candle of the UT Rockets. But Ben Roethlisberger, the quarterback of the Steelers, you know, a guy who has not been one of the, you know, favorite guys, if you will, of a lot of people throughout his career because of some questionable actions when he was a younger man, has really kind of grown into one of the statesmen, I think, for the league, and he's a very, very well-respected and mature guy now. And, of course, he's a local, too, Finley, close enough anyway to being local in Northwest Ohio, right? Ben Roethlisberger was speaking about Andrew Luck yesterday and said he fully expected Luck to play. This is before he was ruled out today, of course. And Ben Roethlisberger wanted to make a point to Andrew Luck, and he said he really hopes that Luck is very, very cautious about getting out of that protocol too soon. Roethlisberger told Indianapolis reporters on a conference call, "The brain is nothing to mess with. He is young and has a long career ahead of himself." He said he knows he's a tough competitor, but he's really got to be careful. Now, some might say, well, of course he doesn't want him to play. He wants to win, you know, and like Andrew Luck being out of the game is a great. That's not the point. I want to give you the quotes from Roethlisberger. He said, when asked by Indianapolis media whether he's kept track of his own concussions, he said, "You know what? I have no idea. Maybe too many." He said, "I've played this game for a long time, and younger days in my career when I wouldn't have missed time. There were many times I would have said that I haven't told anybody that I had been dinged or had a concussion. Looking back on it, I wish I would have." You have to be smart when it comes to your brain, because you only play football for such a short period of your life. When you have a family and people that you are going to be with for the long term, you have to really make sure that your health is taken care of. He said this is a, quote, violent sport. One injury can't be played through, he said. You can rub dirt on a lot of things, but you can't rub dirt on your brain, end quote. And I just thought that was really, really a great statement, and not one that says, you know, I don't want Andrew Luck to play. You know what? You're in the protocol, man. You don't get to play for a competitive advantage against the Colts in a must-win game for the Steelers, who are tied atop their division right now. I feel like it was from player to player and man to man, out of genuine concern. I've been banged around in this game, and I've had my brain rattled a few too many times. I wish I would have told people, because you know what? You only get one shot at this. So I just want him to think about it and be very, very careful. And I just think that's a great statement and a great message to be sent from one player to another. But because he did it through the media, hopefully a lot of other people pick on that as well. Discretion is the better part of valor. There's no reason to go out there and say, I'm going to be courageous and put yourself in jeopardy. If you really, really feel you have had some sort of a brain episode, take your time and come back and play for the long haul rather than get in there for this particular short week. And that's where I'll leave that. I just an important part of the story. All right. Here's what we have. We've got a sports center coming up here, and on the other side of the sports center, we're going to get out of the way, and we're going to talk to Jason Candle. I mean, out of the NFL situation, we're going to go back to the college football conversation. The Rockets and Western Michigan get after it on Friday, and they're going to battle for the MAC Western Division Championship and a spot in the MAC Championship game at Ford Field up in Detroit. The Rockets have been so close for a long time, and now they take on an undefeated Western Michigan team that is going to be a very, very tough challenge for them. And we're going to find out what Jason Candle thinks about that challenge and that matchup when we come right back here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here as we continue some college football talk. 37-19 a week ago was the Toledo Rockets win in the home finale in the Fog Bowl, if you will, at the Glass Bowl. And then, of course, on Friday, it's the big showdown with Western Michigan with the entire MAC West on the line. And to help us talk all things Rocket football, we once again welcome in the head coach. He's been so gracious with his time over the course of the season. Jason Candle joins us here on the ticket. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Doing great, Jim. How are you?
Hey, I can't complain. 37, let's start last week, 37-19. Winners over Ball State in the Fog Bowl. I've almost never seen anything like it. First comment on that. How does that change things as you're going through a game where in certain situations, like maybe punt returns, it's getting really hard to see the ball?
Yeah, very difficult situation. You know, something you certainly can't prep for or practice for. But, you know, maybe we got lucky in the second half. They didn't see our guys running free a couple times. But, you know, it was certainly interesting and, you know, had to make some adjustments. You know, brought a couple of our coaches from the press box down, the coach from the sideline, and, you know, the communication. It made it very difficult to, you know, to get things sent in because at times in the game, you know, the players couldn't see from, you know, even our own hash mark to our own sideline to get some of the communication done. So give our kids a lot of credit, though. Stayed the course. Fought the fight and certainly played well to finish it off.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. I didn't even think about that part as I was watching that unfold. That, yeah, it's going to be kind of hard for all your other coaches on the staff who are up in the booth to see anything. And obviously you guys, though, did adjust well. 37-19 was the final. Another 100-yard game for Kareem Hunt. Another outstanding performance from Logan Woodside. This just keeps going and going.
Yeah, it does. Two great individual performances. You know, a lot of weapons offensively, you know, that Logan has at his disposal. Certainly Kareem, you know, being a major impact in the football game to get 100 yards rushing and almost 2 yards away from getting 100 yards receiving as well. Big game for him. And, you know, what an explanation point on a great career at Toledo in the Glass Bowl on senior night and, you know, 23 great seniors we send off. And, you know, in their final game at Toledo, it was very important for us to get that win because, you know, last year's class didn't get a chance to experience that. So, you know, I thought that was very, very important for those guys to go out and feeling good about themselves their last time that, you know, they put on a uniform in the Glass City.
Yeah, good point on that, Coach. We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the extravaganza. Talk to me about the first couple of drives for you guys in the third quarter. It's 20-10 at this point coming out of the locker room. Obviously, the fog is going to be what it is and kept getting essentially, I think, worse as the game went on. You guys are able to go on two consecutive drives to add 10 more points on the board and get you some breathing room. Walk me through those couple from both sides of the ball because obviously, the defense had to go out there, and you know, everybody's playing with the same disadvantages, very hard to see. Put a couple zeros on the board, and then you guys expand the lead to 10.
Yeah, it's no secret that, you know, if we win the coin toss, I like to play defense first and, you know, try to get the football to start the third quarter because I like to feel like at the halftime I've got a really good sense of the game and how that's going and like to have it offensively because I always feel like to get off to a good start to start the second half is really crucial. You know, we were able to, you know, get Kareem on a big screen play that went 70 yards and a touchdown, an explosive start to the half and put us up 17. And then, like you said, got a stop and we're able to, you know, go down and get convert that into a field goal. You know, it gave us some real breathing room there. And, you know, as you mentioned, now the conditions become a real factor for both teams, you know, and you can play, you can play to your lead a little bit as the play caller on offense now. So you can, you know, you really do a good job of taking care of the ball yourself and you don't have to be super aggressive to try to make a bunch of things happen and things you can do with a 20-point lead that you don't necessarily can in a close football game. So certainly I thought those two drives were big and, you know, obviously converting into points there were huge.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the extravaganza. 37-19 in a fog bowl a week ago, and that now finally sets it up, Coach. Now it's finally the time to talk and think about it. Undefeated Western Michigan in Kalamazoo on Friday, very late in the afternoon, around sunset time, about 5 o'clock for the kickoff for this one. It's kind of been circled on the calendars as the weeks have gone by that this may very well be a battle for the West Division in the Mid-American Conference, and that's exactly what it turns out to be.
Yeah, you know, big football game for our team and certainly, you know, their team as well. They're a tremendous team, and You know, when you're able to run the conference schedule and you're out of conference schedule without any losses, you know, certainly that's very difficult to do. You know, there's only two teams right now standing that are undefeated, them being one of them. You know, and you know, there's a lot of teams that start playing football, you know, September 1st, somewhere around that first weekend, that have that same goal in mind, and only two have been able to stand the, you know, withstand the test. So, you know, they're a tremendous team. They got a ton of respect for them and what they've been able to accomplish. You know, certainly not taking anything away from our guys, you know, because we're a very good football team as well. And we'll have our work cut out for us Friday for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. I think both squads are going to have their work cut out for us. I've been glancing at Western Michigan's schedule because as you correctly point out, Coach, Western is only one of two remaining teams in FBS 1A, whatever you want to call it, that are still undefeated, the other being Alabama. I think we've all heard their story at this point. And you do have to play well. You have to have talent. You also have to get a little luck out of conference. You know, as a MAC school, everybody pretty much has to bare minimum once go on the road to usually a Power 5 or tough opponent. So sometimes you got to get the schedules to work in their favor, in your favor, I should say. In Western's case this year, the two of their out of conference wins were road wins at Northwestern and at Illinois. So, you know, Big Ten teams, but not as solid as, say, if they had to go to Ann Arbor or Columbus or something like that. But it still takes a lot to be undefeated at this point in time. They've had their way with the rest of the Mid-American Conference so far, and obviously they can come at you in a whole bunch of different ways.
Yeah, they got a lot of talent. You know, certainly a very good quarterback who doesn't make very many mistakes, if any at all. You know, he's a very good decision maker. He takes care of the ball. He's only thrown one interception the entire season, so you know, he's very conscientious about what he does with the football, and certainly have a big-time playmaker, a guy that will be a high draft pick at wide receiver, and, you know, a really good running game, you know, around a big running back and a solid, solid offensive line. So, you know, in a tight end, it really, you know, blocks very, very well. It's probably as good as anybody in our league at that position. So, you know, they are a very talented team offensively. You know, defensively, they're a pressure team and like to come after you and, you know, can cover you and play a man-to-man coverage, which not a lot of teams in our league can do. So, you know, they present some problems for you, you know, when you as you're looking at them and preparing. So, you know, we got to be really good in our preparation, have a really solid plan, and, you know, not beat, you know, Toledo. If Toledo loses this football game, it can't be because Toledo beat Toledo. You know, we have to make Western Michigan beat us.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Coach. We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza. Talk to me about the other possible problem with this one. You guys have to go to Kalamazoo for this one.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll have a tremendous home crowd, you know, but we're no stranger to that. You know, we went to BYU and, you know, had to play in front of 70,000 and, you know, a place that was really, really loud. We played in some big-time places in the last 2-3 years, and certainly I don't know if I put a ton of stock into that being a huge advantage or disadvantage either way. Obviously you'd like to have your games at home, but I think there's something about going on the road, and I think that our kids really, you know, like, and we've always kind of traditionally played well on the road. So you know, Thanksgiving weekend, and you know, looking forward to taking the team and going and spending Thanksgiving Day in a hotel in Kalamazoo. What more would you want?
I especially with a MAC title game appearance on the line, I would venture to say not much more, Coach. Coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets joining us. Here's something I want to throw at you, just to gauge your thought on it, because it's obviously something that you guys probably haven't brought up, but we at times have. I made the argument that we around here in Toledo are quite possibly the only people in mid-American country who are going to be pulling for the Rockets in this game. What do I mean by that? Well, if Western Michigan can hold out and then win a MAC title game next week, undefeated's going to look real good to that playoff committee, and there is that what I refer to as the best of the rest bid to a New Year's Six Bowl. If Western Michigan can hold this, that's quite a payday for not just them, but for the whole conference, the way all the money is distributed. Just your thoughts on that, because that door is open for the Mid-American Conference if Western Michigan can hold, and you guys are the ones standing in the way.
You could say that we're the underdog, but you know, that's fine. You know, that's how we like it. You know, there's a lot of guys in our locker room that have been the underdog there and counted out their entire lives. So, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. I think we're in a great spot. You know, certainly all of those things you mentioned are added expectations and hopefully a little pressure on them. So we just got to go play. We got to execute and have a good plan and certainly execute the plan.
If you guys could get the win on Friday, what will it mean to finally get the Toledo Rockets, who due to various circumstances, such as not being able in recent years to get past Northern Illinois, what will it mean for this program overall to make it back to the Mid-American Conference title game?
I think we always said that we wanted to be playing for something meaningful in November. You know, we said that for 11 months. It's given validation to our kids that, you know, everything we've done in the offseason, what we've worked for, it's here. Now it's time to go finish it and go do it. What will it mean to win Friday? Certainly provides another opportunity. Provides another opportunity to play another week of football. And, you know, certainly even more, you know, as you keep going in this thing, ever since the Ohio U game, I think at that point in time, our team could have went one of two ways. We could have been staring at a 7-5 season and lost the next couple games after Ohio U, or we could have turned it around and got to where we're at right now. And, you know, I think I give our team a lot of credit and a lot of fight in these guys and a lot of resolve to keep playing and keep punching, keep swinging. So, you know, each week the game has gotten a little bit bigger, and this one's no different. And if we happen to win this one, the next one will be even bigger. So, but that's what we've played for and prepared for since I got the job in December.
It is the biggest one of the season, arguably. The Rockets on the road on Friday against Western Michigan, and all the possibilities of them maybe staying undefeated or the Rockets going to the Mid-American Conference Championship game. The winner of the West Division will be decided in Kalamazoo on Friday. It'll be a huge game. It'll be a fun game. And best of luck, Coach, for you and the rest of the players out there on Friday. And hope when we reconvene, we're previewing the Rockets in the MAC title game, because that would be sweet.
Thanks, Jim. Go Rockets.
That is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, taking a few minutes to chat with us here on the Extravaganza. And, you know, it is now time. We've been kind of nudging at this one for a few weeks now every time we bring up the Rockets that, hey, look at that, circle Black Friday. You're going against Western Michigan, and look what they're doing. It's all going to be on the line. And now, finally, here we are. And that was a very diplomatic answer, by the way, by Coach Candle there. I expected it not to really cross their minds or to use it and say, hey, let's go be that underdog again. But it is kind of true. A Toledo Rockets win probably costs the Mid-American Conference a couple of million dollars minimum, because if it is true, the way it's shaping up, and I see the rankings and stuff that are trying to give a little love to Boise and Houston, but the fact of the matter is, they both, or at least Houston, cannot win their conference. Boise State is on the outside looking in terms of their own conference. They lost the tiebreaker, and since that bid to a New Year's Six game has to be a conference champion of the mid-majors, I don't see how the committee could pick anybody else but Western Michigan should the Broncos be undefeated. I mean, how can you keep them out if they're undefeated, even if you'd rather have a Boise State? So this is a huge game for not just the Rockets, not just Western Michigan individually. This is a huge game for the entire Mid-American Conference, because this is a possible big payday for the conference, the way, as we know, the monies from bowl games like this get distributed. And one of those New Year's Six games, from a Mid-American or mid-major standpoint, that's a huge chunk of change that they would all love to get their hands on. And let's face facts. A Toledo Rockets win puts them in the MAC title game and makes them favorites to win the MAC title game. It would most likely, in that case, be a rematch against Ohio U, which is one of two losses for the Rockets and their only conference loss this year. But Rockets are the better team overall, and I think would be favored in that game. But make no mistake, the Rockets beat Western Michigan. No MAC team is going to go to that New Year's Six Bowl. It might even be somebody like a Navy out of the American Athletic. So this is a possible huge payday for the MAC if Western Michigan keep it rolling. On the flip side, you know, Toledo comes into this game. They're 9-2. We know the loss by Ohio, and then, of course, the crazy game back and out of conference end of September on that late night Friday night out at BYU. 55-53 that game was. And you know, for the Rockets, because of the strength of Northern Illinois in recent years, we know that this is a Rocket team that hasn't made the Mid-American Conference championship game in quite some time, even though they've fielded some very good teams, as we know, in the last 5 to 8 years. They just haven't been able to get past Northern Illinois. Well, now Northern Illinois had a down year. Rockets beat them in Chicago. That game was in Chicago, not in DeKalb. And now it's Western Michigan who's getting all the love. They're high up in the rankings, both AP and the playoff rankings, which is to be expected for a team that's undefeated. As, again, Coach correctly pointed out, there are only two undefeateds, as we know, in all of college football left, and the other one is Alabama. And that says it all, doesn't it? So this is a huge game for both programs and a huge game for the conference in general, and I still really believe that. I really do, guys. Only we here in Toledo are going to be pulling for the Rockets. Anybody else with any kind of connection to the Mid-American Conference is totally rooting for Western Michigan because they want to see an undefeated, which would give them the inside track for a New Year's Six bowl game, you know, something like the Cotton Bowl. I mean, think about it. What other way would Western Michigan or a MAC team play in the Cotton Bowl? You have this system that the way we have it now, and you get an undefeated like a Western Michigan could be in 2 weeks if they could beat the Rockets, and then most likely Ohio in the conference title game next Friday night. But, you know, for the Rockets, very important, I think, to get off to a good start in this one. Quiet the crowd. This is going to be the biggest buzzing crowd in Kalamazoo in a long time. Because in addition, I was looking at their schedule, and I pointed this out to Coach with Illinois and Northwestern. That's part of how a MAC team can go undefeated. You have to have the schedule gods line up correctly, you know, because in football, as we know, out-of-conference games are usually scheduled a couple years, plural, in advance. And you have to have the schedule gods like you. And in this case, it lined up for Western. Their out-of-conference games were a 1AA North Carolina Central. They killed them. They put 70 up. Then you got Georgia State, or Georgia Southern, I should say, a not very good Sun Belt team. And then your two games, and a MAC team knows this definitely, you're always going to have at least one road game against a power school of some kind. Well, this year, for Western, that was at Northwestern. Opening game of the season, they squeaked out that one. And then they crushed the Illini in Champaign. So when you're out of conference, power team road games are Illinois and Northwestern. The schedule is in your favor. Long and short of what I'm trying to say is, thumbing through what they had to go through in the MAC to get to this point, you could argue that in conference or out of conference, this game against the Rockets is without question Western Michigan's toughest game of the whole year, because Northwestern's not very good. Illinois is terrible. The other two out-of-conference games were jokes of opponents, and the MAC schedule was not all that great. They didn't have to play Ohio, for example, the leader right now in the East. They're just now getting the Rockets. So this is a huge game, and that's for Western for obvious reasons. And that's why I think it's important for the Rockets to play some clean football and get out to an early lead to quiet that crowd that will definitely be there on Black Friday for this one. It's a 5 o'clock kickoff coming up on Friday in Kalamazoo between the Rockets and the Western Michigan Broncos for, at bare minimum, the West Division and a trip to the MAC title game on the line. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks for hanging out with us. Stick around. Drive Time followed by Face Off, the hockey show, the next couple hours here on The Ticket. Yours truly, Jim Kusler, will be in for Mike Miller, and then we got some college hoops of the Ohio State Michigan variety a little later tonight, so stick around. I'm in for Mike Miller. Drive Time and then Face Off, the hockey show, coming at you next.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.